How are you guys doing? My name's Eddie. I'm an alcoholic addict. And I usually don't do too well with the podium thing because of the whole yes, your honor, no, your honor, like the yes, no, yes, that kind of, yeah, so sorry if I seem a little nervous, but, you know. My clean date is December 31st, 2010, just celebrated a year. I know this is AA, and I'm a member of AA, but, you know, drugs do play a big part of my story. And there is a little story that, you know, I would like to tell that kind of always reminds me of the fact that I'm not a social drinker. I was living in Philly at the time. Me and my girlfriend at that time had moved up there from Pittsburgh. And we moved up there from Pittsburgh because I had warrants out in Pittsburgh. And because, you know, I'd ripped off everyone that I could in Pittsburgh and all that, blah, blah, blah. So after a while of living in Philly, you know, we have this huge fight. You know, we break up. She moves back down to Pittsburgh to live with her family. And over the next couple of weeks, you know, we started talking it out and, you know, going through the whole motions. And she convinces me to come back down to Pittsburgh to pick her up. So I round up enough money for a Greyhound ticket and get a friend to drive me down to Pittsburgh. And, you know, and he drops me off. And by the time that I get there to her house, she's basically decided that she wants nothing to do with me. So I've already, you know, I'm in Pittsburgh in a town that I have warrants out for me, and I'm basically there for no reason. So after this fight where she tells me she wants nothing to do with me, you know, I need to calm down, but I want to stay away from the, you know, from the cops and from anything illegal and whatnot. So I go to a bar, you know, and I start drinking some more. Before I know it, I'm totally twacked, and I have no idea, you know, what the heck to do. So I do the next logical thing, and that is to go back to her house. I go back to her house, and I put a huge brick through her window. I get into this huge fight with her brothers, you know, get the hell beat out of me. And you know, I managed to scramble away from that. And the last thing I remember before I come to was thinking, man, I just drank up all the money for this Greyhound bus ticket. I don't know what I'm going to do. When I come to, I'm in a really small kind of crawl space type area where I can't even stretch out. It's pitch black. I'm sweating like crazy. I don't know what to do. I mean, I am freaking out. The first thought that comes to my brain is the fact, this girl's brother has got me in the trunk of his car, and he's driving me out to the woods to kill me. I mean, that's it. My life is over, and I am freaking out. I don't know what to do. You know, I start scrambling and, like, kicking and trying to see, you know, just trying to figure out where I'm at. And I see when I start kicking that, you know, I could, like, a little space starts to open up, and I can make out, like, you know, grass green, maybe kind of bushes kind of area, and I'm like, I'm in the woods. I'm dead. They're going to kill me. This is it. This is the end. So I start panicking and kicking and kicking and kicking. When they open it up, I step out, and I was in the luggage compartment of a Greyhound bus. I guess I got it into my head that I was going to sneak out of town this way. And I have, you know, and that was it. And so I'm freaking out. I get out, and, like, this poor guy, I mean, who's, like, trying to figure out what to do with me, says, I'm going to go for help, and I take off running and leave, and that's it. And I hung out in front of a gas station for about 4 hours trying to figure out what to do, and I ended up waiting there all day for another friend to come pick me down from Philly. So, yeah, that story, you know, whenever I start complaining to my sponsor about, you know, why can't I be a social drinker? Why can't I be, you know, one of these weekend warriors, that kind of thing? And he says, you know, social drinkers don't usually end up in a luggage compartment of a Greyhound bus. That, you know, social drinkers don't drink, you know, their weight in beer and then decide to go stick needles in their arm. You know, that, and that's the way I've operated for a long time. So any, like, illusion as far as, like, you know, because I've been on the alcohol maintenance program several times, and but that illusion has been smashed for me. I've recently had the opportunity to go speak at a detox a couple nights ago, and that was a pretty humbling experience. You know, because I went in there thinking I was going to save the world. There wasn't going to be a junkie left in the room when I was done with it. And come to find out, they treated me exactly the same way I treated speakers when they came into the 9 different detoxes that I've been in my life. You know, I'm glad to see that nobody's nodding out, nobody's falling asleep, you know, nobody's begging to go back to their room. So it's nice to be in a room, you know, with people that might want to hear this, you know. So, but, you know, I'm first generation born in the United States. My parents are Cuban immigrants. And my mother, God bless her, you know, she learned everything about, you know, life in the United States from daytime television. You know, Donahue, you know, not Oprah. Oprah wasn't around yet, but stuff like that. So, you know, the idea of, like, you know, talking out your problems, you know, the family's problems and everything was set, you know, in her mind. So, like, I can remember the first time she sat me and my sister down to, to give us the stern warning about drugs and alcohol, you know, and, like, getting high and all that kind of stuff. And the reaction that it had on me was, high? What's that? You know, I was curious already. So that tells me that I had something, you know, wrong with me a lot longer, you know, long before I ever picked up my first drink. I'm from Key West, Florida, and usually when I tell people that and they know the rest of my story, they're like, well, you know, that figures. You know, Key West is, you know, I'd been hanging out in bars and starting to get high probably by, like, the age of 14. But that's just the way, you know, I saw everyone else living. Everyone came there to do that, you know, and I was living there year-round, so it was great. You know, it was perfect. You know, from an early age, I was pretty doomed from an early age. I had, you know, all of my heroes, everyone that I ever looked up to, you know, whether it be music, to the, to the artists that I like, to the writers that I've read, they were all drunks. They were all, you know, junkies and all that stuff. And that's what I idolized, you know. So, like, when I hear this, you know, that somebody says I didn't wake up and, you know, dream of being an alcoholic, I honestly have to say that, yeah, I did. You know, those are the things that motivated me in life. And unfortunately, you know, the thing is about that is that when you're detoxing years later, you know, like, Keith Richards doesn't show up with, like, a warm towel to dap your forehead and stuff. You're doing that shit alone, you know? And I had to learn that, too, the hard way. So, the other thing that I learned, too, is that most of the stuff that I was reading, the stuff that inspired me, I didn't realize that stuff wasn't written until those guys got clean and sober. So that means that those guys are still kind of my idols, and, you know. So, for any of the, like, the newcomers, if you were to tell me that a year ago I would be, you know, doing stuff like this and, you know, believing in God and figuring out that, you know, that is the solution to most of my to all of my problems, I'd have laughed in your face. You know, it took me a long time to get, you know, to where I am. I mean, yeah, I have a year, but it took me like 10 years to get here. That's not something that I'm willing to let go of too easy. So when I get asked, you know, 10 minutes before I speak, to speak, I really can't say no. That's what's crazy about me these days, and it's the things that I'm noticing about me, is my willingness has just changed so much. They talk about the psychic change in the big book, and, I unfortunately never had the burning bush or anything like that, but what I do pray for is the fact that, like, you know, a couple years down the line when I'm still sober and clean, that I do realize that it basically has, well, almost nothing with anything that I had to do with, you know, that something else has been guiding me. I would sometimes get, you know, discouraged when, you know, after my mom picks me up from a hospital because I overdosed again, that she would tell me that God has a plan for me. And for a long time, the only reason why I knew that was true is because my mom told me, and my mom's never lied to me in my life. So I've clung to that for a while. So those are the things that, you know, have been helping me out. If all you came here to do is to get clean and sober, then, you know, You know, you could probably get by with just working, you know, the first three steps. But unfortunately, when you come to AA or NA for a while and you get a little bit of clean time, that's like opening Pandora's box. You're never going to be able to use or drink again with that same clean conscience that we had when we first started using. I know every once in a while that that thought comes into your head, like, you know, we start thinking about, you know, our past stories. You know, we start thinking about them like the Loch Ness Monster, like Bigfoot. Does that stuff really exist? Did that really happen? And the thing about that is that we're better than prophets. We're not psychics. We know exactly, you know, where that stuff is going to take us because we've already been there. And that's another thing that I've started learning. You know, I've always said that, you know, who better to lie to me than me, because I'm a great liar and I'm very gullible, you know? So, you know, so, but like, these are the things. I just don't believe myself anymore when I start thinking this way, this irrational way, you know, because I've got just, you know, miles and miles of proof, you know, just lined up against that. I don't know if anyone like in here is like me. I've spent the last, you know, 8 to 10 years of my life in the lost and found, or, you know, basically the lost and stolen, because, you know, I never found anything. I stole everything. And I haven't wanted to own anything for a long time, basically because I didn't want to be obliged to owning anything. I didn't want to be responsible for anything. And the fact is that my recovery, you know, has been paid for a long time. I've got the receipts on my arms. I've got the hospital bills. I've got all of that stuff, you know. And now, basically, this is the first thing that I've ever wanted to own in a long time. And that's all I'm trying to do nowadays, is own my recovery. You know, I don't make excuses anymore when somebody offers me a beer or anything like that and say, no, I got to work in the morning, or I got stuff to do in the morning. No, when somebody offers me a beer, I say I don't drink. And when they ask why, I say it's because I'm a junkie alcoholic. I can't do it. And usually that shuts them up. So, like when I tell that story about, you know, the Greyhound bus and stuff, it's funny because I've got normies, I've got friends and stuff that, you know, don't drink or haven't drank the way I do. So when we start to comparing, like, our drunk stories and stuff, and I share that story, you could hear a pin drop in the room, you know. And that's another reminder that I don't drink the way they do, you know, and I never will. I'll never be able to. So it's nice to be able to be in a room that finds that story, you know, as funny as I do now, because I lived through it and I didn't end up dead in the woods. Thank you, guys, for letting me speak.